You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
We are back in Knoxville and on a beautiful afternoon. So glad you have decided to join us. So we're bouncing around everywhere, and our next stop is Tuscaloosa. As we say hello to Tom Luganville, who is part of the call tomorrow for Arkansas and Alabama. Tom, thanks for dropping in. Great to have you here. Tell us what you're learning, as many people believe this game is a foregone conclusion, but you know differently. What do you know about Arkansas, and what in the world can they do to stop this losing streak?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you with Arkansas, it's actually pretty simple, Paul. It's been about penalties, and it's been about turnovers, and it's been about shoddy offensive line play. And if you look at their last four losses, three of those four losses included double-digit penalties, including double-digit turnovers. They've also been sacked 20 times in the last four games. So a lot of Arkansas's woes have been self-inflicted wounds. They are playing really hard and actually really, really good defense when you consider the hole that the offense has put the defense into at times. But, you know, one possession games has been a bugaboo for this program. Coach Pittman's had 19 one possession games. They've won five. And so winning close games is critical for Arkansas. If they can avoid the penalties, protect the football, then this is going to be a much better football game than people will think.
Tom Luganville, let me get to the other side. So much scrutiny on everything that happens at the University of Alabama. Let's start with the matriculation of Jalen Milroe. We know the backstory. He played one of his best games, if not the best, against the Aggies. Where is he in your estimation?
Well, I think he's probably an all-time high from a confidence perspective. And confidence at the quarterback position, you can't put a price tag on it, Paul. You really can't. I think he's an accomplished deep ball passer, really gifted in that area, still developing and coming along in the short and intermediate game when it comes to having some nuance, knowing how to take something off of the ball. You know, I think it's also important to note that, yes, there's been problems with Alabama up front, but Jalen Milroe himself would tell you some of those problems have been on him because he hasn't always taken what the defense has given him with the first read of the first target, and he's held onto the ball, and that's led to some unnecessary sacks. So I think the key at the end of the day, keep getting better. He's grown each and every week. He walks into a room now. He lights up the room. He's got a big smile on his face. It's so easy to like this kid. If any fan out there of college football or an Alabama fan met this kid, you'd never get on Twitter and say a bad word about him. I mean, that's how good of a guy he is. And he's working, and they're getting better. Got to come up with a way to run the football. Got to handle movement up front in the offensive line so they can stabilize in pass protection, get ahead of the chains on early downs, because he's coming along as a passer. He's really developing nicely.
Tom, what's happened in that regard? Because we were led to believe early on that this was going to be a very strong offensive line. Alabama was going to play bully ball. Clearly that didn't happen. Is it youth? Is it inexperience? Is it simply a lack of discipline? What do you see up front for Alabama?
I think it's a combination of all of those things. Now, when you look at the left side of the line of scrimmage, that's the youngest part of the offensive line. You're starting a true freshman at left tackle outside of the quarterback position, might be the most important position on the field, and you're in the SEC with a true freshman. Tyler Booker's a true sophomore, and they have a redshirt freshman and a sophomore backing up both of those players. The right side of the offensive line is a little bit more experienced. I think it's been undisciplined play. Coach Saban has referenced fundamentals and a lack of adherence to those fundamentals. They haven't handled movement pre-snap and post-snap very well, which has led to an awful lot of the pre-snap penalties. And let's not forget that when you have those pre-snap penalties, And now all of a sudden you're first and 15 and first and 10. Your first down play call could tend to change. And that's impacted the run game early. So I think discipline when it comes to crowd noise, snap count, pre-snap movement has gotten them into a lot of trouble. They really like the running back room here. The running back room is 3 to 4 deep of really good, as Coach Saban would call it, consistent performers in that area. So if they can clean things up in the offensive line, and they have talent. They have NFL caliber athletes, but they haven't played from an execution standpoint like that just yet. And this may be somewhat of a work in progress each and every week. They're just looking for improvement each and every week.
Tom, let's talk about Alabama, because so often we focus in on the negatives and all the mistakes that they are making. But, you know, they've come somewhat back from the dead after the Texas game. And I realize they have some pretty difficult games ahead. But as you look at Bama versus Georgia versus some of the other elite teams, is there a significant difference, or are they on that level?
I think they're on that level, particularly on defense. And I think because of the defensive side of the football, they have a chance every time they take the field, because they are so disruptive and they are so capable of creating negative plays, sacks, tackles for loss, quarterback hurries, pressures that lead to a potential turnover, that they're always giving their offense a chance. This would be a different conversation if they weren't making the incremental progress on offense that they have made, I would really say, from the Ole Miss game to this point. And so if you took their 22 and you took Georgia's 22 and you took Ohio State's and you know, even Texas, obviously, you turn the ball over, you have 10 penalties, two of them negate touchdowns in that game. So you lost that game, not to take anything away from Texas. But I do think that you could put them on the field with anybody and they'll play with anybody. This has just been one of those years where the quarterback position, coinciding with a new leader in the offensive room, a new staff, a new quarterback coach. You know, Jalen Milroe, believe it or not, has never had a quarterback coach as his position coach or as his head coach going all the way back down to middle school football. This is the first time he's ever had a quarterback coach that's played quarterback that is coaching him. And I think as this thing continues to progress, if you ask me the same question that you just asked me now in 3 weeks, my answer would be an unequivocal yes, because I think they're going to continue to develop and escalate.
And the reason we bring it up, and you know us, so we can't wait for the season, then we can't wait to get to the big games of the season, then we can't wait to get to the end. But you start to look at Alabama 3 weeks from now against LSU, maybe 6 or 7 weeks from now against Georgia, and those are the critical games. Those are the games that this program is going to have to win. I'm not looking past Tennessee next week, but we do want to see what Tennessee looks like tomorrow before we get to that. We're trying to figure, because I thought they were an elite team when it began, but they looked so porous at times that we lost track of it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the penalty side of it, the undisciplined side of it, that Nick Saban and the staff have acknowledged, they're, you know, it's not as if they're not trying to address it, not as if they're not trying to minimize those things. But when those things haven't happened regularly in the past of Nick Saban's tenure, and they're happening now, they become more magnified, they become more glaring. Now, I don't know of a lot of football teams, Paul, that could commit 14 penalties, not be able to run the ball, and win the game on the road versus a good football team. So I look at their growth and their development. Let's just say you start to cut those penalties in half, all right? You're starting to run the football a little bit more effectively because Jalen Milroe is continuing to progress in the passing game. This could be a really, really dangerous football team. And I think they're a team of a bunch of workers. You know, the terms I keep hearing, smart, especially on the defensive side of the football, blue collar, brings his lunch pail to work every day. When you start hearing about those types of adjectives and descriptions of players, they've probably got a pretty good nucleus and group in that locker room. And I think the most important thing, if you're an Alabama fan right now, is your quarterback for the first time has enough confidence to believe, hey, I can do this. I can keep improving. And pretty soon I might be pretty darn good at this.
Tom, exit question on that, on the issue. You talked about the 14 penalties, many of them pre-snap. It's frustrating. It's exasperating for Nick Saban, but we've seen it 2 years in a row now. When you're in the you're in the meeting rooms, you've coached. How do you deal with that, and how do you stop it?
I think the big point of emphasis is you can never, ever, ever let the little things go unspoken, meaning that something as simple as a guy catching the ball and then he tucks it away, but he really doesn't cover the point of the ball. Do you address that as a coach? Every little tiny thing, whether it's snap count stuff, whether it's the details of pre-snap movement, which has caused Alabama problems, what do? You go address it, and you address it over and over and over again to where all of a sudden it just becomes second nature. And I think when you have that, it's kind of like dealing with turnovers. When you have the turnover bug, it's like you can preach it, you can coach it, you can talk about it, you can drill it. Sooner or later, the player's got to go do it. So I do think it's an attention to detail approach that you have to have, that you can't cut anybody any slack. You have to show that the small things matter so much, and if you take care of those, the big ones will take care of themselves.
Tom Lugemill, live in Tuscaloosa. Great to see you, Tom. We'll see you very soon. Tom, part of the call tomorrow for Arkansas and Alabama. That is an early game in Tuscaloosa. We are here on Rocky Top. And everybody having a great time. A&M into Tennessee this weekend. Many more guests to come. We'll head to Baton Rouge. That's another game we're watching. Auburn heading to Tiger Stadium. Katie George will join us next.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We're back. We're live in Knoxville, Tennessee. A busy afternoon. So many great things happening up here and a lot more to do with so many guests from here, including the Chancellor of the University of Tennessee, about an hour from now. We've bounced around a lot of different places to go on this Friday afternoon, and we will head to Baton Rouge next. Katie George, who has made her appearances occasionally here on Friday afternoon on set, she joins us now from Baton Rouge. Katie, thanks so much. Great to have you with us as one of the most interesting games of the week as Auburn tries to figure some things out against an LSU team that has one side of the ball figured out, not the other. Good afternoon.
It's good to be with you, Paul. Thanks for having me on without Joe Tessitore, so you and I could really sit down and talk. I appreciate that greatly. As you mentioned, super fascinating game between LSU and Auburn. I think, you know, Auburn coming off of a bye week where Peyton Thorne and this receiving core really got to focus on some of the disconnects that they've had in past weeks, open communication, route running, getting on the same page. I'll be curious to see where this pass game is when they enter Death Valley. They plan to attack early. Obviously, you know that Hugh Freeze, they want to run the football first and foremost, but they've got to get something going in this passing game, especially against a secondary that has had its ups and downs for sure this season.
Yeah, I want to concentrate on that because I think we are blankly saying LSU's defense is terrible, but I think you just nailed it. I mean, there are certain aspects of this that are not good. There are also some aspects that have enormously talented players. What are you hearing from coaches all week on how they're trying to continue to fix this defense?
Yeah, well, actually, they feel like they're in a good place now. We just wrapped up our meetings with Brian Kelly and defensive coordinator Matt House at LSU facilities. And as you mentioned, the good players, I mean, Mason Smith is making progress in his return. Kai Wingo, obviously, is a staple piece up there up front. Greg Penn is kind of the leader they rely on. And then you've got Harold Perkins, one of the most dynamic athletes in all of college football. And, you know, a lot has been put on the secondary, but they've changed their defensive structure. They're now in a four-down structure. And Brian Kelly was very open and honest. He said, look, you know, Florida State, I'll give us that. Like, we didn't know exactly what structure we needed to be in. But, gosh, it took us too long to get to this point. We tried to do too much with Harold Perkins, especially in that Mississippi State game. Even though they dominated that game offensively, he pointed to that. He said, we were putting our secondary cornerbacks and safeties out on islands into too much space and putting too much on them. Now we've kind of closed in on that space, and we feel like they're in a good position to succeed moving forward. It just took us too long to get settled into this structure. But he felt like second half at Missouri last week, they gained a lot of confidence, got a couple takeaways certainly, and they feel like they can build off of that momentum, you know, as they return to Death Valley. And I think this is a get-right game, either for the secondary to build confidence for LSU or for this passing game for Auburn as well.
Talking to Katie George on the call, part of the call, tomorrow night. And Katie, on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, everyone going all in on Jaden Daniels, and why not? I mean, mm-hmm. He's playing on a two-loss team. He's mentioned among the Heisman candidates. Take us through the offensive side of LSU.
Yeah, he just makes it look easy, doesn't he? Like, he's running 21 miles per hour, and it's effortless. He's just running past guys. It looks like he's jogging. And I think we as a crew have had a unique experience covering Jaden Daniels since he got to LSU. We had LSU six times last season. This will be our second. We've had this game 3 years in a row, Auburn-LSU. And, you know, last year when we were down at Auburn, Jaden Daniels threw for 80 yards. I mean, they were still trying to figure it out with all the new pieces. He wasn't stepping on anybody's toes. There was a feel-out process. And then when they played at Florida last year, that's when this offense really started to kind of take off. And now it's prolific. Truly, it is so much fun to watch. He certainly has his pieces around him to make him look good. But, you know, Brian Kelly, Mike Dimbrock, the staff put together a plan and said, here's the plan in the offseason. If you follow it, if you fix these things, if you progress in certain areas of your game, we think you could be great. We think you could be a Heisman Trophy caliber quarterback. And he's been able to do those things. And so you have to commend him for putting in the work and making the progress. But my goodness, when you hear Hugh Freeze on a Monday say in his press conference, you can't stop him. I hope we can, you know, hold them to field goals. I mean, that's saying something when an SEC head coach looks across the side and recognizes how powerful of an offense this is. But on the flip side of it, you know, Brian Kelly and Mike Dimbrock recognize that, you know, Auburn has a great front seven. And Brian Kelly said, this is the best collective group of 11 guys on defense we will have faced up until this point of the season, which I think is telling.
Katie George, and Katie, you alluded to that other person when we came on the air, Joe Tessitore. No, 2 weeks in Kentucky with him, now in southern Louisiana. How did you able to break free just to do this short interview without the overbearing tones of Joe Tess?
It's a fair question. Something I struggle with, quite honestly, every weekend. luckily, we were both double booked, so I got the Fine Mom Show. Thank you very much. If you requested me, he's doing something else, a different interview, and that's how we were finally separated. And I got to tell you, it's nice to be able to breathe.
I'm guessing he's doing either a wine show or some culinary show. Is that fair?
Yeah, who cares, right? I mean, who cares what he's doing? But yes, probably something to that degree. Probably nailed it.
Tell Joe, a few of my friends took offense. You probably were on the sidelines not paying much attention But when he went all in defending the difficulty of what Notre Dame had had to deal with, you know, the Duke game, the North Dakota junior college game, by the time they got to Louisville, I mean, there were a lot of people that just were cringing and texting me saying, hey, what's up with your friend? I know you had a few connections to Louisville, and that was something you had to try to be nonpartisan, but I imagine mm-hmm. you heard that.
Yes, I did. And you know what? It was interesting because that's how it was posed to us in the meetings. You know, Notre Dame had changed some of their scheduling because they felt like, you know, with the gauntlet, as they would call it, right, Ohio State, and then you obviously have Duke on the road, then you go on the road to Louisville, which kind of felt like a gotcha game, and in fact it was, USC tomorrow night. They changed practice schedule. Obviously, they had midterms. That was a big talking point. And so it felt like that's the message that they had for us of, like, this is a pretty tiresome stretch of the season. You know, we have no gimmies by any means. And I don't know how you felt watching that game. I was questioning Louisville's physicality going into it. I just wondered if Louisville could match Notre Dame's physicality. Louisville was by far the more dominant physical team on both sides of the football, which I was shocked by. And I don't know if that was Notre Dame just being tired from the 2 weeks prior. But if you want to be a special team, if you want to be a championship caliber team, you can't get tired and can't take games off and can't struggle like they did on the road against Louisville.
My thought on that, Katie, not to beat a dead tessitore, mm-hmm. but it just seemed like, I mean, I grew up when Notre Dame was really at the epicenter of college football, and it was just hard for me to mm-hmm. digest. And I'm all in on Duke. They're a really nice little program. But it just seemed like Joe being the Northeastern elite, taking care of a few of his friends in South Bend. That's personal opinion.
Yeah, I will make sure that message is passed along, shall we say. And I'll make sure that note gets to him. But
okay, well, tell him that. I don't know, what, over the 15th course at some fancy place. So you can wait till he's a little bit wind up before you drop that bomb on him.
Exactly. Perfect. I'll find the right time.
Katie, thanks. Always great to have you on. Katie George, the star of that threesome on ESPN. We'll take a short break. We're live in Knoxville.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And how about this? There's nothing tricky or scary about this deal. The first 350 fans who arrive to tonight's volleyball match will receive the Friday the 13th t-shirt. It is Friday the 13th, and the coach of a top 10 ranked Tennessee team, Coach Eve Rackham-Watt, joining us. And first of all, Coach, congratulations. It's been a while since the Vols have been at this lofty height. Must be cool.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a good season. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we're delighted. So let's talk about tonight, since it's a couple hours. You look rather calm for a coach a couple hours before a big game. Or a big match, I should say.
Yeah, you coming? It's 6:30.
I might. If I can get a free tonight. T-shirt, I'll be there.
Okay,
I need
good.
A new one.
Yeah, a big match against Auburn and big weekend for us. We got two matches this weekend.
It's a sport that people love, and I profess to not to know how you get the right components. So let's talk about how you built this team into a highly regarded group of young women.
Yeah, I think, you know, we got here in 2018, our staff came in and really had a vision for what we wanted to do with this program. You know, this is a place that obviously has tremendous fan support and a ton of support from the administration, and we really felt like this was a place we could build it. And Tennessee volleyball had been good in the past, and so when we came in 2018, I felt like, you know, we can get this thing turned around. And COVID threw a wrench a little bit in things, so it slowed us down a little bit more than we would have liked. But you know, last season, actually coming into the year, I thought we had a great team and just never could get healthy. And then, you know, this season have been able to put it together with staying healthy and adding some really good new pieces.
I'm curious, in terms of recruiting, how is the process, and describe from start to finish, how do you find the players that fit your program and are quality to the point where they can play at this level?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we recruit nationally. You know, we start recruiting, looking at high school freshmen and sophomores, and once we can communicate with them. But for us, really, we try to be extremely honest in the recruiting process. I think one of the things I'm really proud of is just how we've built this culture, kind of a team first mentality, and really been honest with players when they come in that the team is first and we're going to build it the right way. And you know, if you look at our team, we've got players who have redshirted, who've sat on the bench and kind of earned their time and really worked hard to get themselves into the lineup. And I think that's important to have and as role models on the team, and you know, players that younger players can look up to. But for us, you know, the recruiting starts young. It's year round. It doesn't stop. But it's obviously a great place to recruit to.
We know, I know the SEC is very talented. I see the games, and but it's not unusual that the SEC is elite in pretty much every sport. How would you compare this league to some of the other conferences that you've been around and familiar with?
Yeah, the SEC has come so far in volleyball, and specifically this year, it is really tough top to bottom. Everybody's good, and so that's been really fun, is to actually watch the growth not only of the sport but within the conference, even from when I got here 6 seasons ago, how much better the league is now. You know, and I think a lot of that is just the popularity of the sport, as you've probably seen the crowds across the country and the viewership and the amount of eyes on our sport, which has just been tremendous. And it's just so it's grown. It's grown in the South region, and there's more girls playing volleyball here than there ever was before. They keep telling me it's the fastest growing sport for high school girls and young girls. And you know, once people come and they get into it, they're you know, it's such a fun sport to watch. And so the sport has continued to kind of accelerate, and then this league is, you know, just gotten better and better.
I have a friend of mine is in her 40s and she's still playing volleyball. Of course, she just hurt herself trying to do what she did when she played in college. I'm curious, though, for young people, because, you know, we hear so much about soccer and we hear about other sports. How do young women get interested in this, like other sports?
Yeah, I mean, it starts young. There's club volleyball, you know, as young as 9 or 10 years old, girls will start playing. And the club scene has grown. I mean, even when I was growing up, there was, you know, one club team in kind of the one half of the state, and there was another couple down in Southern California, and then across the country there was clubs, but not the way it is now. I mean, there's thousands, tens of thousands of clubs across the country, and so girls are starting really young, and there's so many opportunities for them to play. And I think, again, being able to see the viewership on TV and that for them to watch and see them, you know, I could play college volleyball one day, it's growing the sport and growing the interest.
No, it's it's interesting to me because you watch certain sports come on and you all of a sudden you go, how did that sport become so popular? And this is the, at the moment, what do you think it is? I know these are very pedestrian questions, but I think a lot of people in our audience may have seen it, but don't really have the familiarity that obviously a top-ranked coach does.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think a lot of it is we kind of got a little bit of viewership, and then they've seen their people are watching, and so then we're putting volleyball on TV more often, and more people are watching, and I think it may be a surprise, but it's kind of grown over time, you know, slowly, steadily, but as the viewership comes up, you know, the crowds are coming up, and because so many girls are playing, I think that obviously is also driving interest. But again, it's been so amazing to see it, especially this year.
Yeah, I realize you're still very young, but as you were playing club ball and and go immatriculating to college. I mean, could you have ever believed that games like yours would be nationally televised, the tournaments, at a high premium? It seems like and I think that's for a lot of sports, but this one in particular.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think, you know, we were happy if there was a couple hundred people in the stands, you know, and there was people's parents, they showed up, and maybe some of your friends were there in the stands, and now you've got the community coming out and supporting, and it's just, you know, you get 1,000 or 2,000, 3,000, obviously what happened this year at Nebraska with 92,000 people there, and some of the attendance records that have been set across the country, I think that's getting people's attention for sure, and then it's, you know, people are wondering, what's this about? And they turn it on, and it's actually such a fun sport to watch. It's so exciting. The girls are so athletic. The game is being played so much faster than it ever was. And there's more girls playing, and so that, you know, the athletes are just growing.
Yeah, I mean, that was what, about a month ago, that scene in Lincoln was one that, I think young girls across the world had to see and just marvel at. And I know as an elite coach, I know you did. We're just down the street from Neyland Stadium. You think we could ever get the Vols in there one day?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, let's do it. Let's get 102,000 people in there.
But before we do that, tonight, right here on campus, Auburn is in town, the 22nd-ranked Auburn Tigers. Thank you, Coach. It's really
Thank
great to meet
much.
You.
I appreciate
you coming
Thank
by.
Thank you.
We head to the break. We have a lot more to do on this Friday afternoon. The Chancellor of the University of Tennessee will be by in about 30 minutes right now. We'll take a short break.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. It is Friday afternoon, and we are in Knoxville. We go across the country to Seattle, where Holly Rowe joins us, part of the biggest game in the country tomorrow when Oregon and Washington clash. Holly, thank you very much for joining us. Before we get to that game, and I do want to get there, and I've asked you this question before because you have a lot on your plate right now with the WNBA. What is it like shuttling back and forth between college football and the biggest story in women's basketball?
Well, it's really cool. I'm lucky I get to do it, but I will say it is very challenging. So, for example, I'm doing this game on Saturday in Seattle, and then I'll race to the airport and take a red-eye flight to get to New York City in time for game 3 between the Las Vegas Aces and New York Liberty. And it's a labor of love. It is challenging, but it is such good basketball. I think the saying is you can sleep when you're dead. So hopefully I'll sleep later, but this is really fun. We are setting viewership numbers. It's Sunday, 3 p.m. on ABC Eastern Time. So I'm grateful for you asking about that because it's amazing. The basketball has been so good, Paul. It's been amazing.
Yeah, Holly, I think while most people are sleeping, I don't know why, I'm just going to take a flyer here that you're preparing for your next assignment while you're flying across the country.
Yeah, I'm actually, this is the home of Kelsey Plum, and she is playing so great for the Las Vegas Aces. She scored 26 points in game 1. She had a career high in the playoffs with 3-point shots in game 2. And she played right here for the University of Washington Huskies, where she set the new career Division I scoring record all-time scoring record in women's basketball. So I'm feeling a Washington type of weekend with the Huskies and Kelsey Plum in the WNBA finals.
Well, no doubt. Well, let's get to the big game. And I know you've had fun when you're not doing games, getting ready for this. Two elite quarterbacks, two programs that are about to move conferences. And if anyone doubted their relevance, just watch tomorrow afternoon. Take us through your preparation.
Well, I'll tell you a cool story because I know you love the Tennessee storyline. So Bo Nix, who is the quarterback at Oregon, who transferred from Auburn, and Michael Penix Jr., who is the quarterback at Washington, both went to the Tennessee football camp when they were juniors and sophomores in high school. And they both got offered a scholarship on the very same day at Tennessee, but they didn't. Neither one of them ended up there. One went to Auburn, one went to Indiana, and now they've both transferred clear across the country. Bo Nix at Oregon is playing some of his best football we've ever seen. Their offense is fast and efficient. He's getting the ball out quick, and he has a command that has been a huge step from what we saw him do in the SEC. But I actually just met with Michael Penix at Washington, and he is such a fascinating kid. Number one, he's one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the country, completing over 70% of his passes in his last game. And he is just calm and composed. This is a huge, huge rivalry game. Over 123 years of history in this series. This is the first time in over a century that these two teams are both ranked in the top 10. I am told that the hype around this game has never been more. But talking to Michael Penix, he said, "I am calm no matter what." He does his best work because he is calm in these kind of hectic, chaotic moments. He said, "Even ask my teammates, I am always the same guy." And he'll need that kind of composure and poise on Saturday against the Oregon Ducks.
Holly, you hear, I mean, certainly you mentioned Bo Nix, but a lot of people are also praiseworthy of the defensive side of the ball for Oregon. As you look inside these other matchups, what stands out?
Well, okay, so keep in mind, Washington leads the nation in offense. You know, their offense is on pace, their plays per game, their productivity on offense is the best in the country. But this Oregon defense has found a way to be fast and physical. I think what you'll see is Dan Lanning made his name on defense. We saw him win a national championship as the defensive coordinator for Georgia. He has taken that brand of fast and physical football to the Oregon Ducks. And I think you'll see them pressure Michael Penix. I think you'll see them be disruptive, try to get him out of his rhythm, make him uncomfortable. That's what Dan Lanning has done. And I like what we're seeing from Oregon defensively. I just think Washington is the best offense in the country right now. Who wins that matchup?
Holly Rowe joining us from Seattle. It's an amazing scene out there for people who have not been. You can certainly participate and partake all day. Holly, I always love to go back a little bit. And you're looking at two of the elite teams in the country here. Last week, you're on the sideline for another matchup between what are clearly two of the best teams. What was your takeaway from the State Fair in Dallas?
Number one, it's one of the best football games I've ever been a part of. You started that game with turnovers, fake punts, fake field goal. Like it was a chaotic, crazy game. I think those are still two of the best teams I've seen this season. And, you know, people are going to think Texas dropped off the table. I want to point out their injury to their center in the very first quarter of that game was a huge deal. Jake Majors is the guy that communicates on the line, sets the protections, helps Quinn Ewers, who you've got to remember has only played 17 college football games in his career. So I think that was a huge deal. I still believe Texas is one of the best teams in the country. They just had some really unfortunate injuries in that game with their safety going out and Catalan, who did not return, their center going out, who did not return, and their big tight end, Jatavion Sanders, who is a do-everything guy. But I loved Dylan Gabriel's composure down the stretch. You saw two game-winning drives. Oklahoma just got the ball last, and so they ended up winning the game. But it was awesome. One of the best games I've ever seen.
Holly, we appreciate it. It's always great to have you on these Friday afternoons. We know how busy you are, especially with your cross-country travel. Be well, be safe, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you so much, Paul. Appreciate you, always.
Great to talk to Holly Rowe. We have an opportunity here. Don't have too many on Fridays, but we'll try to sneak a call in here. And let's start with Phil in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
We are doing great. Thank you.
I'll tell you right now, Paul. You're in Knoxville, Tennessee, the great city of the world. I'm telling you right now, the Vols lost the game to Swamp last year, or this year against Florida. We're coming in Knoxville right now, and we're going to beat the hell out of Texas A&M. Then we're going to Alabama next week, beating the hell out of Tide. And then we're going to Lexington, Kentucky the week after, and beating the hell out of Kentucky. And we're winning the national championship here, Paul. I'm telling you right now.
Okay, one question, Phil. Can you identify where you are right now?
I am currently in Knoxville, Tennessee at Yeehaw Brewery.
I mean, listen, I don't claim to be an expert on anything, but I would have bet all the money we could gather here that you were somewhere near a bar. I didn't realize to the extent of my prediction that you were at a brewery. So as you are making these statements, how much of that brewery have you slurped down?
Oh, yeah, we just got here having a good time. Once I saw that you're coming to SC Network in Knoxville, we knew that I had to get on the show because I tell you right now, Paul, you're a great host, you're a great man, you bleed orange and white just like I do. But guess what? The Tennessee Volunteers are going to be the 2023-2024 national championships, and you heard it here first, sir.
Phil, I'm heading over. Give me a craft beer. I will be there in about 10 minutes. We will be right back. A former Tennessee player will join us next, and then the Chancellor of the University of Tennessee in a few minutes. We're back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.